Welcome to Subway Sports Talk.
Dan, clear of the closing doors, please.
Welcome to Subway Sports Talk. My name is Peter Kennedy, and I'm your host. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in to SST on Apple Podcast App, Spotify, and on YouTube. Don't forget to follow on socials at Subway Sports Talk. And, of course, here today, 1 week into the MLB season, we're here to talk some Yankees. We're here to talk some Mets. And to do so, the one and only designated hitter, Andrew Calagna, back from Florida in the full swing of baseball season. What's up, brother?
How's it going? Ready to break down the big topic that's on everyone's mind. Did you see that Mojo is back? X-Men 97. How hyped are you about Mojo?
Motendo is coming through. I guess that episode is actually out as we speak, as it's currently Wednesday evening right now. I will probably watch that before I go to bed tonight or when I wake up tomorrow.
I mean, since I'm on spring break.
No, I knew he was coming back, though. I was locked in. I seen the title card or the whatever, the episode titles, I should say. I saw Motendo. I was like, all right, right? We got Mojo. And to be quite honest, Drew, and you know what? We're going to get to the Yankees. We're going to get to the Mets. Let me just throw that out there. Yankees, Mets, full-fledged baseball podcast here. But since you sparked my interest here, X-Men 97 has been very fun so far. I'm definitely pro. I'm definitely happy. But I wasn't locked in as a kid. Because if you think about it, when it came out, 92 to 97, I'm born in 94. So I didn't really catch it live. I've seen episodes plenty of times before. Like I've seen a bunch of it, but I've never watched it like weekly. I didn't see the entire thing. But now going into this universe, I'm enjoying myself, man. It's a pretty good show. What do you think though? What's your thoughts?
Oh, it's fantastic. And to be completely honest with you, you know, I didn't become more aware of the 90s X-Men until I was like in my late teens, early 20s when I was in, I like rewatched the whole thing when I was in like college. I was more of a X-Men Evolution kind of guy. I actually think X-Men Evolution was better than X-Men, the 90s version. But no, this has been, it's been amazing. The animation is on point. The voice acting's great. The twists, the continuation, you know, it's been anything you can ask for. Actually, a Marvel product I've actually enjoyed.
And you actually are tuning in consistently too, which has been unlikely for you lately. And another thing too, because it's interesting, like that show, I watched this full video on New Rockstars where they like literally recapped every single episode of the original animated series. So I'm locked in. Like I know what happened. I know what went on. I felt a little bad doing it. I'm like, does this show, the 92 to 97 run, does it deserve me like going onto Disney Plus and watching like five seasons of TV? I'm like, I don't have time for that. I got too much other shows, too much other stuff to do. So I did it anyway. But it was a kid's show. A lot of not kid-friendly topics going on here. And not like they're the worst things ever, but like love triangles, sexual references, all the good stuff that we loved in our children's shows from yesteryear.
Charles Xavier, Magneto, remember the Holocaust? Like, you know.
Yeah. Just something light for a Saturday morning.
Yeah, you know. Remember your parents dying in a gas chamber. Come on.
Our girl Rogue just thick as fuck. Thick as, you know what I'm saying? Like, how are you doing out here, Rogue, back in the 90s? They nerfed her a little bit in the
little bit.
They nerfed her a little bit, but she's still looking good, so it's all good. But yeah, it's just funny because it's a kids show that has so many not kid level themes, and it makes you remember, like, the shows back then were built different, for starters. Yeah, and B, like, you were what? Probably seven when the show came out?
Yeah, it came out in 92, so I was six.
So like you're not tapping in and really understanding at six years old.
No,
what the hell's going on?
Watching
on
them beat up robots each week, and you know, that was it. Wolverine, like you know, being saying, like the grumbly guy.
Bub?
Yeah. That's really it.
That's good, but it is good. So anyone in a Marvel fan world who's not tapped in yet, definitely worth it. A lot of good shows right
absolutely.
Now. Oh, Shogun, by the way, fantastic. Invincible, a little bit iffy season two, but still pretty damn good. I'll get back on topic. What the heck are we doing here, Drew? Look what you did to me. You got me all worked up.
Well, let's talk about Matt Rempe. What do you think of the fight tonight? That was wild. 5-on-5 just to start off the game, reminiscent of the 2012 when the Rangers and Devils faced off, they just started fighting straight off the face off, and that was
yeah.
Keandre Miller, I think he might have killed a guy tonight. That was wild.
Yeah, so let me ask you an actual serious hockey question before we get to the full baseball episode, which I promise is coming. We're going to talk about some Yankees for sure. But Rempe came along and became like a little folk hero here for the Rangers, right? And
yes.
What could you say that he came in at the perfect time from an energy perspective? Because I feel like just following – I more so follow people who follow hockey rather than follow hockey myself. So I'm aware of it through you, through some other people in my life. I get through Twitter and online stuff, whatever. The Rangers were like hitting a lull of the season. People were nervous about their actual playoff aspirations for a little while. And now this Rempe guy came in and it feels like he kind of ramped up. See what I did there? Ramped up their energy again. And now they're like back to being this true playoff level contender, somebody like a team to be reckoned with again. Is that
fair?
Yeah,
no, he brought the energy. He brought the physicality, which was desperately needed for this Rangers team. They were, you know, they were kind of getting bullied around a little bit. They didn't really have that enforcer type guy, but now they have this 6'8" goon who I wouldn't even call him a goon. Like he actually is like a solid third, fourth line winger that that can score on occasion. So, you know, I think having him for the playoffs, be able to wear down other teams, be able to be physical, and you know, when those series, NHL series, go 5, 6, 7 games, you need those kind of guys to wear down the other team physically. And, you know, I think it's the perfect spot and the perfect player that the Rangers need going into the postseason, hopefully as the number one overall seed.
Yeah, it seems that way. From an outsider's perspective, it was like, oh, this guy seems like he came in at the perfect time to just spice things up and really like make things happen for this team. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about why we're actually here. Andrew Colagna, we missed you last week on our baseball preview. Shout out to Pat Boyle and Cody O'Connor, who held it down in your absence. We're not shouting out Alec other than me just saying his name there because he's not tapped in. He's not here. He ain't locked in like you and I, Drew. And hold on, I'm about to sneeze. Excuse me.
Gonna edit that out.
No, I'm not editing that out.
Leave
I
it
sneezed,
in.
But I worked that cough button like a pro. Oh, did you hear that sneeze?
No, I did not.
Look at that. A thing of beauty. Anyways, the baseball season is here. The excitement is real. We're feeling the energy here in Yankees world specifically. We're going to start with them. Where I want to start, before we get into what's working, what's not working, the strengths and weaknesses, Juan Soto in New York has played, what, 6 games, 7 games to this point?
7 games.
7 games?
Yep.
One thing that I've noticed, Drew, is that people who are Yankees fans, who are good Yankees fans, who are baseball fans, are already won over to a different level than they expected by one Juan Soto. And what I mean by that is in baseball specifically, you're so locked into your team, 162 with the Yankees, you only get to see certain people a certain amount of times. And I think Mets fans had a different level of understanding of Juan Soto because of the Nationals and the Padres for some level here. But now that you've seen him 7 games in a row on your team, watching every pitch that he's looking at and Soto shuffling to, do you feel like you have a different appreciation for him, even though you're as locked in to the MLB as anyone I know?
No. I mean, you know, he was good. And again, you know, when I stayed up for, you know, for late night baseball, I was usually tuning into the Dodgers more than the Padres. So I wasn't fully checking in on Juan Soto. So like, you knew he was good. You always knew that he was an elite talent, but just like seeing the small things up close, seeing like the way he works a count, the way that, you know, he's kind of underrated on defense too, the way that he can just like bring the energy up on an entire team has just been so surprising. And like, I don't know. After the first game, I was like, just sign like a $500 million contract, like per year, like whatever it takes to re-sign him. Like the Yankees absolutely have to do it. And maybe, you know, maybe the rest of the season doesn't go so well after these 7 games, but man, that he is a type of talent that like lifts up the entire team, the entire ship, or what's the rising tides or rising ship brings up all tides or whatever that saying is.
You're almost
is
at a, it.
Yeah. whatever it is. It's close. It's like Scott Boras. I have a boat metaphor somewhere. But yeah, he's he's a generational talent, and just like the little things he does has been so fun to watch every single day. And you know, I can't get enough of Juan Soto.
I think that's the beauty of baseball that gets lost in this era, right? Like you hear the talks about analytics, and we've talked about this, you know, till we're blue in the face. I'm not going to go super deep into it, but you can boil somebody down to a few numbers so easily. You can look at Juan Soto's OPS and say, oh my gosh, this guy's such a freaking good player. The Yankees are just so lucky to have him on the team. But that doesn't tell the full story for so many guys. Just like how Yankee fans are ultra aware of how good Aaron Judge's eye is and how much he gets screwed by the strike zone frequently, right? Like now with Soto in town, you're seeing some of those same things already. And like, again, somebody who I know, who's probably one of the best Yankee fans I know, he's a baseball fan. He's just finished his stadium tour, going to every stadium. He just said to me the other day, you know, I've watched so much Yankees. I've seen Soto play. I've actually seen him in person once. And like, I've been blown away this first weekend of baseball with the Yankees, watching him every single pitch. And I think that goes to show what he's going to continue to do for this team moving forward. But all right, let's bring this back together now, Drew. What a start here for the New York Yankees. 6-1, winning in a multitude of ways, winning close, winning late. We're seeing it all from this Yankees team right now. And I just want to start asking you, we can start going back and forth. I want to run through some of the things that we like, some of the things that we don't like. Why don't you start us off with something that's jumped out to you as a positive about this Yankees team?
I mean, aside from Juan Soto, they've been winning in different ways. They've been down on a couple of the games to be able to come back, score against a really good Astros bullpen, probably the best three relievers in all of baseball, in Abreu and Presley and Hader, and they've been able to get through all three of those guys each night and score and come back and win. And it was just different guys. Oswaldo Cabrera, obviously, I don't think he's going to continue to be, you know, have a 600 batting average. Volpe's been looked fantastic. Defense is there, and you know, you see that he straightened out his swing a bunch. He's if he can actually get it going at shortstop, and you know, I was pretty down on him after last year. You know, again, Gold Glove shortstop, hit 20 bombs, but really didn't do anything else with the bat. If he can turn into an above average or even a league average hitter, and you could put him on top of you know, you can lead him off eventually, and you can put Gleyber Torres in the five hole, and man, that lineup is going to be so good. And the offense, I knew it was going to be much improved this year. You know, and they still won 6 out of 7 games, even though Stanton, of course, hasn't hit. Judge hasn't hit. Torres hasn't hit. Even outside of the home run today, Verdugo hasn't really hit. So, you know, a lot of the lineup, you know, hasn't come through it. And, you know, in previous years, if you would have shut down Aaron Judge and Gleyber Torres and like their third best hitter, like the Yankees would have gone 0-4 to start the year. But now, you know, Juan Soto brings that energy up, brings all those guys together, brings that kind of energy to the team, where now, wow, just the offense looks potent, absolutely potent. And I can't say enough good things about that. And the pitching staff, the starting staff,
let me hold you there on the staff. We'll come back to the pitching staff, because I have some comments on the offense here. First off, I want to shout out Anthony Volpe as well. You're right. With Oswaldo Cabrera, seeing him off to this hot start is awesome. You know, he's had a couple home runs. He's hit a couple extra base hits here. Beautiful stuff. You want to see him do well. But Anthony Volpe is one of the guys who can really push this team to a different level this year. Not that Cabrera can't, but Volpe's going to be playing every single day, no matter what, no matter who's healthy, who's hurt. He is in the lineup. If he becomes a mainstay of offensive production outside of the sneaky power he had last year, just watch out. This lineup gets lengthened to a different level here. Like you mentioned, Judge and Giancarlo and Torres kind of doing nothing so far this season. He is batting over 500. And even though there's all this talk about him straightening out his swing, he's already hit a home run. He has 3 doubles and he's driving in runs. Like, he is doing all the things that you would dream of from Anthony Volpe. On top of that, he's already drawn 4 walks this year. That's something that, like, he wasn't exactly doing great last year. He wasn't just drawing a ton of walks. His production this year can make this offense go from a middle level offense or a top 10 offense to a top 5 offense. I think that you're looking at a breakout candidate here for Volpe. And we talk about overreactions this early in the season. I'm going out and I'm putting my name on it. To take a word from Pat Boyle, I'm putting my name on this one here. Anthony Volpe, this is not a fluky hot start. This is a breakout season for the Yankee shortstop.
Yeah, he's done everything you could possibly ask for him. You know, sophomore, you think sophomore slump, or you think that he's not going to be able to kind of put it together. But man, 619 on base percentage, 882 slugging. Like, again, that's not something that he's even come close to at the end of the year. But seeing that he's actually, you know, he was so hot at the beginning of spring training last year, and then he didn't really carry into the season, and he was kind of middling in spring training this year. And now he's actually been able to come out hot, and it's the biggest surprise for sure. Because, you know, you expect Juan Soto to be good, you expect Judge to eventually turn around, you expect Rizzo, you know, to do some positive things. But, you know, Volpe, anything you kind of got from him is gravy. But now that you're seeing the potential there, it's just like, now you kind of get greedy a little bit and think that, man, this guy can be a key piece to a core that now with that you could pair him, you know, hopefully you re-sign Juan Soto, that him and Volpe can be like the face of the core going forward. You know, it's a very exciting thought.
And it's crazy how close in age Volpe and Soto are, because, yeah, you know, it's so easy to forget that Soto's 25 years old. And yeah, Volpe, it seems like he's playing on offense, at least because the defense was so good already last year. On offense, he's playing with a calm. He's not pushing. He's not like clenching up there trying to do so much. He's not swinging for home runs clearly, and he's running into them. He actually was. What do you have, like a little hamstring or something? He missed a game, or is that just a regular rest day?
He drank the water. No, he drank the water in Mexico when they were playing their spring training. He had bubble guts.
Yeah, there you go. Official injured list report. Bubble guts for Anthony Volpe. And even with the missing a game or two at this point, you know, he has four extra base hits already. Like that, that's something that's going to go a long way. And obviously he's super hot right now, but it just makes sense. Let's quickly stay on the offense here for a second. What's been your early read here, Drew, on Austin Wells? He hasn't played every game, obviously, but he's played four or five already. What's the early read on the young catcher?
You know, on base percentage is what you like to see. It's in the 300s. You kind of expect him to be a low average, high base guy. And a lot of the hits to right field that I've watched him hit in Arizona and in Houston, those balls would have been out at Yankee Stadium. Like, he is the quintessential Yankee Stadium lefty pull hitter. And I'm like so hyped to actually like watch him hit there 82 times, 81 times a year. So again, I think he's been as advertised. The defense has been a little shaky with blocking the ball, but framing has been pretty above average. And, you know, the question was, will he be able to, you know, stick behind the plate? And everything I've seen so far, I think that he can definitely be that guy. You know, and I, you know, so far he's been a little bit more of the 60-40 split, where him getting majority of the time over Trevino, which was a little surprising considering Gerrit Cole's not, you know, he's on the injured list. So, you know, Trevino was really his personal catcher. So I was expecting Austin Wells to kind of take the reins here, but I get, like, you know, he's still trying to learn the staff, and, you know, you don't want to, you know, run him into the ground a little bit. So you have a veteran guy in Trevino to be the backup. So I have nothing but good things to say about Austin Wells so far, seven games into the season.
There you go. And last question on the offense before we talk some pitching stuff here. I've seen some people online talking about the approach, something that you and I and Alec have spoken about on this podcast for years, with the Yankees specifically having that three outcome approach. It's home runs, it's walks, and it's strikeouts. And it's okay to strike out because you have these big boppers who are going to hit bombs, and that's the ticket to a successful 162. Now, I've seen a lot of people talking, a lot of people observing the Yankees in this first week of baseball here with a more balanced approach, with a more spray the ball all over the place type of approach. Have you noticed that as well? Is that a bit first week hyperbolic, or do you kind of feel a new energy with the offensive mindset of this ball club?
And I definitely think it's them working the count too. It reminds me more of the early 2010 Yankees and the mid 2000 Yankees, where they would just wear down starting pitchers, work deep counts, and, you know, even, you know, they weren't really that successful against Gallen, but they got Gallen to pitch like 22 pitches in the first inning yesterday. And so, like, you have guys that will wear down starting pitchers. And, you know, it's not really that as much of a viable strategy as it used to be, because everyone has guys that are throwing 100, like five, six guys in the bullpen that are throwing 100 just out of there, just a flamethrowing monster. So, you know, if you wear down the starter, you got those guys to deal with. But at the same time, I think that patient approach was something they haven't had in a long time. It was more of, we want to be aggressive, we want to swing at the first pitch, or we want to, you know, swing at the, you know, swing early in the count, where, you know, guys were having like six pitch innings against like the Yankees, like pretty easily. So I really appreciate their change in approach, a change in philosophy. You know, again, that has a lot more to do with the personnel that they had compared to a year ago. Again, you have Juan Soto and Verdugo and, you know, Wells and all these, you know, a few other guys now that weren't here all of last year. So, you know, it's partly due to personnel and, you know, obviously the new hitting coach, you know, change in philosophy there. They might have, you know, whatever analytical, you know, nonsense that they were trying to change up in the offseason seems to have worked so far. But again, you know, half the lineup hasn't hit so far and they still have six wins. So, you know, you can't really argue too, you know, can't really get too upset with those kind of results.
Yeah. And it's funny because we're going to talk about the Mets, obviously, in a few minutes. Half their lineup hasn't hit and they have no wins. Right. So it's really a fickle game in the sense that these one or two plays here, one or two plays there can change the outcome. And we can read too much into it early in the season like this. But there does seem to be a good energy that it's obviously like, all right, they're not a lock now to win the AL East, but you feel really good about their competition level. And to segue to pitching, I heard Jeff Passan talking about this, that exact thing you just mentioned with, you know, getting to the bullpen, even though there's all these guys who are throwing 100, most times, for the most part here, you know, painting with a broad brush here, relievers are failed starters to some extent, yeah. Right? So even if the relievers are throwing 100, they're not as good as the best starting pitchers. They're not as good as the number three starting pitcher, generally speaking, too. So that approach of getting to the bullpen still does pay dividends, especially in a series where if you're getting to the bullpen on game one, it can affect game two and three, and these things definitely matter. Now, on the flip side, the Yankees pitching staff is going to be a question mark here this year. So far, obviously, so good for the pitchers here. You know, you have Rodon, who's already pitched twice. You have Nestor, who's already pitched twice to varying degrees of success. You got Stroman Schmidt and Gill? No. How do you say his name?
Gill.
There you go. What is the early read here on the rotation as going into the season? It was a bit of a question mark.
Yeah. Rodon has been bend, not break for two starts now. You know, he's still not having the swing and miss stuff. And again, I'm still overall pretty concerned about him. Nestor, you know, he's still doesn't look all the way back from, you know, from shoulder surgery. He seems to, you know, be pressing a little bit, you know, a lot of hits, a lot of walks, not, you can't be too, you know, excited about him taking the mound so far. But Stroman and Gill have been, you know, have done very well, at least their limited times out there so far. And Schmidt has been, you know, he's been okay. He almost got through six innings, decent amount of strikeouts, a little too many hits. But, you know, again, it's been a bend, not break rotation as much as anything. So the bullpen on the other hand has been absolutely lights out. Like I knew the Yankees would, you know, they always do their voodoo magic on turning random guys into like great pitchers, but like they turn Ian Hamilton to legitimately like a top five reliever in the game right now. And it's, you know, I'm not shocked by it, but I'm still like kind of in awe on how dominant he's looked for, you know, two innings at a time. And just like guys haven't even had a chance. Like he made the Astros top of the lineup just look silly, you know, a couple of days. And, you know, he did the same thing with he did that with Ketel Marte and Corbin Carroll today. So, you know, he's been a huge, huge surprise. Clay Holmes, three saves so far, looking pretty good. Loaiza looked pretty good. You know, even someone like Caleb Ferguson and Nick Birdie have all contributed in certain ways. And again, all guys, all those guys, all five guys I just mentioned there have a zero ERA. So it's been great. Absolutely great.
So as of right now, you're still looking at this Yankees bullpen saying, hey, some of the names are different. We don't know all these guys just yet, but I trust the Yankees to put together a strong bullpen yet again.
Yeah. No, and a lot of, and it was crazy. A lot of the preseason rankings were putting like the Yankees bullpen way down. They were like, I think on Fangraphs positional power rankings, I think they were like 17th or something like that. And I was like, that's crazy low for the Yankees. Like how, like the last like 3 years, they've been like either first or second, like ERA, FIP, you know, strikeout percentage. They like pick any, you know, pick your stat of choice for the Yankee bullpen. They've been like in the top three in every category. I don't know how you could go look into the season and say these aren't the guys that, you know, they haven't figured something out with, you know, their bullpen. So that was a little bit shocking, but I'm not surprised at all that they've come out just like throwing flames. So that's been, you know, it's been nice to see, but you know, I think completely expected, at least from my point of view.
Yeah. And now last thing before I ask you a final prediction type thing on the Yankees here, I want you to talk more about the Rodon stuff, because you've mentioned this in our group chat. You kind of just alluded to it in your last point there, talking about the swings and misses with Rodon. He's been bend but don't break so far, but go into that a little bit further about who he was and who he looks like he is to you right now.
Yeah, no. When he was with the White Sox and the Giants, he was getting, his swing and miss rate was top five in like the league, and he was leading the league in strikeouts. He was, you know, even when he wasn't striking out a ton of guys, he was still getting swings and misses off of, you know, most of his pitches. And now he's getting hit. He's good. You know, he's allowing a lot of contact. Now he's allowing, again, he's been able to strand runners, but he's still allowing, you know, almost his whip is almost two. After, again, two starts, nine two thirds of innings pitched, but the strikeouts, you know, only seven Ks in, you know, two outings. So, you know, allowing 12 hits, walking five, like it's allowing too many base runners, allowing too many home runs already. So, you know, it's pretty concerning to see the decline and stuff. Like he's just not that guy that he was 2 years ago. I don't know if it was injuries. I don't know if he's still building himself up, but yeah, I'm actually if you want to ask me one thing that's the one thing that's concerning me in on this team right now, that's 6-1, it's Carlos Rodon. You know, again, despite the under 3 ERA, it's just, you know, it's been more luck than anything else.
So definitely something to keep an eye on with Rodon moving forward.
Absolutely.
And you could be right. Like, he could just be building up. He could be looking a lot better in 3 weeks than he did in the opening week of the season. So we'll keep an eye on that. Now, Drew, for the listeners, since you didn't do the preview, can you tell us a bit about where you were going into the season from a prediction standpoint and where you are now after a week, if that's changed at all?
I think, you know, they're exactly where I kind of thought they would be. Again, the rotation, big question marks there. You know, Stroman was surprising to me. He had a really great outing going out there. The offense has been as good as I thought it would be. I really think that, again, the roles kind of reversed the last couple of years. It was really the rotation and the bullpen were really the big strengths, and you kind of just thought the Yankees would, as long as Judge was healthy, the Yankees would be fine on offense. But now they have a legitimate top five offense in the sport. And it's so much more fun to watch baseball that way, in my opinion, is to watch like a good offense and then watch your pitchers kind of hang on to, you know, to preserve some of those leads. So it's been great to watch. Absolutely. So not really a ton changed on my predictions. I still think, you know, they were a low to mid 90s win team as currently constructed, especially you got the good news that Cole rehab is going well and he actually might start throwing sooner than they initially thought. So you're going to get your ace back there and that'll just, you know, knock everybody else down a peg and strengthen that rotation even more. And then maybe, you know, the Marlins seem to be looking to sell off. So maybe you can go out and get Jesus Luzardo, you get somebody else at the deadline. So shore up that starting rotation. The offense is going to be fine. So if everything clicks, like, the Yankees could win over 100 games. Like, that's, you know, that's pretty easy to see with this offense. So it really just all depends on the rotation, whether they get there or not. But yeah, they're exactly where they should be. Mid to low 90s win team, should be in fight for the division. I think Baltimore really overplayed. I think it was like 12 wins over their Pythag record, what they should have been last year. So they overperformed. I know they got Corbin Burns and he's looked great, but I'm not entirely sold on them as a team building philosophy. Like, if you were really serious about winning baseball games, like, Jackson Holliday would be on the team right now, but he's in AAA. So you can, you know, get an extra year of team control and whatever else you want to say. But, like, if you were interested in putting the best team on the field, you know, Jackson Holliday would be there. So until further notice, I don't really have much respect for the Orioles at this time. So, you know, I think they'll be good, and I think they have a lot of good young players, but you know, I want to see them do it again this year. So I fully think the Yankees are AL East, should be AL East champions.
So they were +185, tied with the Orioles to before opening day. Now, as we sit here today, after seven games, they are +150 and the favorite on DraftKings to win the division. Is that a bet that might interest you?
Oh, absolutely. Listen, I put all my money, all my Super Bowl winnings on, you know, last year on Yankees futures, didn't turn out so well, but I think this year, I think take that +150 to the bank, especially, I think, I know, go back to the offense for a minute there, that they see what they have in Giancarlo Stanton, and they're not afraid to bench him earlier in the season to make sure to give Aaron Judge a rest. Like, they're not running Aaron Judge into the ground. They're starting Trent Grisham. I think they started him in center field two or three times so far already. And, you know, they've made Judge the DH. So, like, I'm fairly confident that, like, Aaron Boone is kind of pushing, being a little more aggressive and pushing the right buttons. Like, a couple years ago, or, like, even last year, after Oswaldo Cabrera, you know, got off to that, like, that first game start, like, you know, the original plan was for John Birdie, who they acquired from the Marlins, to be their starting third baseman. But he got into Houston at, like, 2 a.m., and they let Oswaldo start the game. So he had that great game, and Aaron Boone last year would have benched Oswaldo and put in Birdie, but, like, he actually did the right thing and let the hot hand, you know, let the hot hand play. So that was really encouraging to see, and, you know, to see that Aaron Boone's not kind of punting those April games and playing the resting game, and, you know, trying to, he sees that, like, the opportunity is actually in front of them for them to go out, be aggressive, win some games. And then, you know, you can be smart about, you know, your key players. You can be smart about Aaron Judge and, you know, do the right thing and sit Giancarlo Stanton and not have him out there every single day just because you have a name, you know, because you actually have actual other good players in the lineup in Gleyber Torres and Juan Soto and Verdugo and Volpe and Wells. So, you know, you're not so reliant on playing Giancarlo Stanton just because he's, you know, he used to be a good player. So it's actually been really encouraging to see. So yeah, definitely hit that +150 on the Yankees to win the division. Because from everything I've seen so far, is this team's a division winner.
There you go. And right now, you know, they had a few close wins, a few comeback wins. They've done it in many different ways, and it's been fun to watch so far. They have, let's see, 3 wins by 1 run, 1 win by 2 runs, couple wins by 3 runs. So they're keeping it close right now. And I think early in the season, if you wanted to be the pessimist, you can say, hey, everything's bouncing their way right now. But it doesn't seem like that's just because of luck. It's seemed like they're making some of their own luck, which is a good thing here for the Yankees so far. Yep. All right. Andrew Kalania, Pete Kennedy, Subway Sports Talk. Time to talk about the other team where everything's not going their way. No. It's the exact opposite right now, where on one hand, we have the Yankees winning these games close. We have the Yankees coming back. We have the Yankees saving their save opportunities. And on the other side, we have the New York Mets, who, if they're not rained out, they're just losing anyway. They've only played 4 games to this point. They got rained out on Tuesday and Wednesday against the Detroit Tigers. Now a doubleheader planned for Thursday, which will be, you know, why this podcast is out. They lost a game by 2 runs, lost a game in comeback fashion by 1 run, and then 2 more losses there to Milwaukee and Detroit. But Drew, let's talk about the Mets in a similar way we just spoke about the Yankees. What I think is kind of interesting right now is half their lineup is not hitting, and nothing else has been able to lift that tide. Like you mentioned, the ship is not being lifted in New York, and maybe that's because only 2 players are hitting above average right now, and that's Francisco Alvarez, who's looked very good so far, and Starling Marte, who's been a great breath of fresh air in this struggling lineup to this point. So to ask you this overarching question, where were you at from a prediction standpoint with the New York Mets? And now with this opening 4 games going terribly wrong, are you feeling better, worse, or, well, I doubt better, but are you feeling worse necessarily about this team right now?
No, I mean, not really. Again, it's been 4 games and Nimmo hasn't hit, Lindor hasn't hit, McNeil hasn't hit, you know, and whoever they're putting in at the DH spot until JD Martinez comes back, you know, they haven't hit either, and Harrison Bader was never going to hit. So that's a lot of guys that are not hitting at the moment, and Pete Alonso doing okay. So you expect the offense to bounce back a bit. The rotation was worse than the Yankees, and I've kind of lived up to that. Severino, oh man, that hurts me as a big Sevy fan. He didn't look good. He wasn't missing bats either, giving up a ton of contact. Maybe you gotta, you know, again, he's hoping he's building himself up a little bit, but that's not looking good outside of that. Manaea was a nice surprise, and I was beating that drum all off season that Manaea was kind of be a sneaky good pickup for them. But you know, their offense is really good, what's going to carry them for the whole season. And again, you're waiting to get a big bat and a big boost in JD Martinez to kind of lift them up a little bit, put them in the middle of the order. So I'm not too worried. So my outlook hasn't really changed. Again, it's been 4 games. So the offense, you know, whenever they do eventually play, is as long as Lindor and Nimmo and Alvarez actually like hit and Alvarez continues to hit, I think they'll be just fine. You know, it's really all about their rotation at the moment. And again, hasn't looked too good so far.
And I want to stick with the offense here because the pitching is a different conversation, kind of like you alluded to there. With the offense, it's so hard to come on here and crap all over this team. Oh, they've been horrible. They can't hit. This lineup sucks. Like, that's just not true. And I'm sorry, Mets fans. Woe is me. The Mets suck again. The season's over. Family Guy meme. We've seen it all. We understand. They're 0-4. They've lost in embarrassing fashion. They haven't played well. It's okay. This lineup is better than what they've put out so far. It's been 4 freaking games. And I know it's fun. I know it's easy to just crap on the Mets in this situation. I know it's fun to say, oh, they suck and they're going to be terrible now this year. Let's relax here, right? Do I feel great about this lineup after what I've seen? No, I feel terrible about Joey Wendell playing more than once a week. I don't know who the frick Tyrone Taylor is, and I don't expect much from him. He batted 4th in his first game. That was stupid. Alvarez already, who started in the 7-hole, in the first game of the year, which was dumb. Already they moved him up to 4. It makes sense, right? That all works. That all is starting to add up here. McNeil, right now, 1-for-12. Lindor, 1-for-16. Brandon Nimmo, 1-for-16. Okay, right there. Those 3 people here, they're not batting .083 for the rest of the season, people. They're going to do better. They're going to start hitting the ball. We know this. It's okay. Everybody relax about this offense here. Alonso's looking all right. Alvarez looks fantastic. He's one of the keys to this team. Marte is a guy who we needed to be good this year. He looks as good as he has in over a year. He looks better in the first 4 games than he did at any point of last season. All right? So if you're freaking out about the Mets, just relax. This offense is going to come around. You're combining 3 hits from 3 of your top 5 hitters right now, or 3 of your top 6 hitters right now.
Three hits. It's been a bad 4 games. You have this stretch in July or June or anything that no one's really betting eye, but because it's the beginning of the season, everyone's pressing the panic button. But you know, they have a lot of good professional hitters and a lot of good young guys. And you know, I think Brett Beattie's gonna hit better than what he's doing. He's already got a home run himself. Again, I didn't really expect much from Harrison Bader offensively, but he's a fine, you know, number nine hitter, and he brings that defense to the outfield that's desperately needed. So, and again, you're going to get JD Martinez back. Pete, do you know like when exactly they plan on bringing him up?
It's something like another week and a half or something like that. It was supposed to be about 15 games for him to play down in AAA. I'm not sure how many at-bats he's gotten
training,
yet.
You know, kind of get his spring training in. I get it.
Exactly. So he'll be back in about 2 weeks. And that, again, will lengthen this lineup to an extent that, you know, it's more than just his numbers, right? Mm-hmm. Like if JD Martinez has an OPS plus of 110, which is like nicely slightly above average, like that doesn't mean that's the only impact on this team and on this lineup here. If he's that guy batting fifth, just being consistent and solid all year long, it makes every single one of these other players who we're going to be counting on that much better. So again, great point. I forgot to mention him in my intro there. Like JD coming back makes this lineup feel a lot better.
Yeah. No, again, it's been four games. That's fine. Again, Lindor's been one of the best shortstops in all of baseball the last 5 years. Pete Alonso is going to hit more home runs. Brandon Nimmo is going to continue to get on base. Starling Marte, now that he's healthy, he looks like an impact bat. Again, Jeff McNeil won a batting title. So, you know, and he's batting seventh right now. So, and plus you have Beatty and Alvarez. And, you know, it's a good lineup. I think it's arguably better than the Yankees lineup. And the Yankees lineup is great right now. So, like, they have so much depth from top to bottom that, again, yeah, they got off to a bad start. But that offense, it's going to be easily, you know, top five in the sport by, you know, come September. So those are, you know, I have no worries for the Mets offensively.
Yeah, and you look at some of the losses they have here too, right? Like they're 0-4. I know it sucks, but guess what? They made a great, feisty comeback in game two against the Brewers where they almost completed it. They lost 7-6. That 5-0 loss against Detroit was an extra innings loss. Their pitching and their defense was fantastic for 9 innings. All right. So yeah, they didn't hit that game either, but it's not like they're getting blown out of the water, striking out, you know, 28 times a game. This is not a team that you should expect to be 0-14, right? Yeah. Like they're going to start strapping some wins together here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a little bit of bad luck, a little bit of, you know, again, guys just starting to get together, playing in the cold weather, you know, like it's, you know, absolutely miserable to go sit through. Anybody who sits through April baseball, those are the real fans, you know, sitting outside when it's 50 degrees, windy, slight rain, like that's just miserable. No one should be playing, you know, baseball in the Northeast in early April, late March. Like that's just not cool, man.
Yeah, it sucks. It's like there's no rhythm. Opening day rain out. Then all of a sudden you get to Detroit, or you get against Detroit, not in Detroit, and you get back-to-back rainouts. There's no rhythm. There's nothing going good right now for the Mets. Now, on the flip side of nothing going good right now, of course, the starting rotation is a question mark. Jose Quintana, you know, a fine opening day start. Nothing to write home about, but not bad. Tyler McGill pitched actually decent, but he's hurt, and now he's on the 15-day IL. We talked about Severino already. Sheldon and I pitched really well. They just signed up Julio Teheran, bringing him back. Well, not back, but bringing him to the Mets. The rotation was a question mark, Drew, and it remains a question mark here. What do you read here? Do you think Seve had a bad first start, or do you think this is going to be a trend? Do you think Jose Quintana can become a number one level guy?
I don't think Jose Quintana has ever been a number. He'll be a number one guy in the Mets, sure. But I don't think he's a number one guy. I think realistically, you know, a best case scenario, he's like your number three or your number four. You know, at least at this stage of his career. But he's a, you know, he's a professional pitcher. He gives you, you know, he's much of an innings eater as that definition warrants in 2024. Not that anyone really eats innings anymore. But yeah, Seve's tough. He's been, again, as he's been healthy, but even last year, supposedly he was healthy and just did not pitch well. And, you know, he definitely got hit around a little bit versus Milwaukee. And, you know, that 11 hits and only 3 earned runs was, he was very fortunate to only give up 3 runs there. Yeah, maybe it's about him getting built up a little bit, maybe adding a little more velocity. But yeah, Seve, my guy. You know, he looked great. He looks great in the beard. You know, the post, you know, a lot of post Yankee beards don't look great, but his does. But you know, a little disappointing to see how it goes. And you know, now that you know, the Mets rotation was already so thin, and now, you know, you're hoping on Julio Teheran to come in and be your five. Yeah. That's not a great situation to be in. So
yeah.
You know, I have some faith in Adrian Hauser to be better than expected. Again, I don't think he's going to be great. He's more of a middle of the rotation, you know, number three, number four starter. Seems like that's really all the Mets have until, you know, Senga comes back. Hopefully his rehab is going a little bit better. So
reports are it's going pretty well.
Yeah. So, you know, you could be optimistic about that. You know, I'm not sure how Peterson's doing on his rehab. You know, McGill gave you a pretty good start. You know, he's hurt now. So, again, a thin rotation is even thinner. So you got to just kind of hope that Minaya and Quintana and Hauser and Seve can kind of hold it down a little bit to varying degrees. But Diaz looked great. He's the new lights and the trumpet introduction was just as good as it was a year ago or 2 years ago now. You know, Brooks Raley looks pretty good. Drew Smith looks good. Diekman looks good. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, the limited action that you've been able to see him in. Again, only four games.
Yeah, I think the bullpen still has enough juice to feel decent about it. Johan Ramirez looked okay in his time, obviously, you know, through at what's his name? Brees Hoskins. Which didn't go well for him.
Bring that Philly scumbag energy to Milwaukee. How do you feel about that whole situation? Did you think it was a dirty slide?
Reese Hoskins on my fantasy team hit a home run today. So what's up, Reese? Thank you for that. you know what? It was a clean slide by the book. It was a late slide for sure. And if your foot goes flying into somebody's leg like that, don't be shocked when they're pissed about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's how I felt about it. Did McNeil overreact? Probably. Is it because it was Reese Hoskins? Probably.
Yeah.
Right? There's a history with Reese Hoskins and the Mets. So I was generally on McNeil's side there. I think he overreacted. However, if you're in game one or game two of the season and you catch spikes into your ankle the way he did, it's very, very reasonable to be upset with that, especially when it's somebody who you famously hate.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw John Boy's breakdown.
Not of the
situation, of the Mets in general and McNeil specifically. McNeil does not break up double plays. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's because it's something that's too close to home with him playing second base and he's afraid to put people in situations he doesn't like to be in, but he put a compilation together of McNeil sliding like 10 feet before the bag just to not break it up. Which, you know, you would look at McNeil and the way he plays the game and how feisty he is, mm-hmm. that, you know, breaking up double plays would be in his DNA.
No,
clearly it's not. Surprising, right? So yeah. I don't know what was going on there. Generally speaking, the Mets looked like the losers in that situation. Didn't help that they lost all the games.
Yeah.
But I do understand why he was upset. He got spiked in the ankle.
Yeah, no. And I don't think it's a dirty slide. And I totally agree that, you know, tensions are high. And again, they don't – Hoskins – and the Mets don't like each other, so you know it's pretty easy to, you know, kind of throw up your arms on that type of situation. But I can't say that McNeil looked good coming out of all that.
Well, Hoskins also looked like a little baby because he waited to get back to the dugout before started talking smack. Mm-hmm. He just like sat there confused for a minute, but like he slid really late. Like, let's be honest, he did. But, like, it is what it is. I really don't care that much about it. But they should have thrown at him in inning one, not seventh
Seve
inning.
Seve should have thrown at him first, you know, first at bat and just gotten out of the way.
Or don't throw at all.
Yeah. Don't wait until the situation is favorable. Just, like, get it out of the way. Have Seve throw at him, you know, unless you're afraid he's going to get ejected. But even then, just, like, you know, Seve's a veteran pitcher. He knows he's got to go out there and protect his guys and
send a message or don't.
Yeah.
Pick a side.
I agree.
All right. Well, with the Mets wrapping this around here to put a pin in this, their over under was 81.5, Drew. Obviously the division hopes for them were slim to none because of how strong the Braves are as a franchise right now and how good their freaking lineup is. My Lord, it's so good. Obviously, the Phillies are a very strong team as well. But the Mets, to make the playoffs, however, was plus 190 heading into the season. As we sit here today after the 0-4 start, let's see if those odds change as I scroll down DraftKings. Yes, it has. Wow. This is kind of wild. They're currently plus 285 now to make the playoffs, Drew. Is that something that might interest you now still with the Mets, even though with the slow start?
No, yeah, definitely, because you have to think that the offense is going to rebound a bit. And again, if you're talking about teams, so if you think about the wild card, it's six teams now that get in, right? Six, I'm not mistaken. So you have,
yep.
You think about
three and three.
You have the Braves.
Three divisions and three winners.
You have the Braves. You have the Phillies, most likely. You have the Dodgers. And whoever wins Central. And then you're going to fight it out with the Padres, who have no pitching, also very flawed. The Giants, who have no offense, very flawed. Arizona, who look pretty good. And we'll see how if Jordan Montgomery and Eduardo Rodriguez can come back and, you know, pitch effectively, because they're very thin on the rotation as well, but even though they have a great offense. So, you know, you're going to battle out with those three teams there. And, you know, if certain things break the right way, and I think the Mets have the best offense of those four remaining teams, so I think that can be a catalyst to, you know, win, you know, to grab one of the last two playoff spots there. So and you can be somewhat optimistic, but again, it really depends on the rotation and if those guys can kind of tread water and not just be, you know, if you could be league average, I think that would be great. But if they're terrible and if Luis Severino continues to trend the way that he is, then it's going to be a long season in Queens.
Yeah. And if Senga doesn't come back to great effectiveness as well. And just from an odds perspective, plus 190 four games ago to plus 285 now, there's value in that for sure. Right. Like if you like them at plus 190 a week ago and they're 0-4, you should probably like them at plus 285. Yeah. You should probably like it a lot. And if you took plus 190, which I did, you should probably throw some more shekels on plus 285, which I'm gonna, right? So like from an odds perspective, like taking my fanhood out of this, it's kind of like if you're watching a basketball game and you bet on a team, I don't know, let's just say you bet on a slight favorite, minus 130, close-ish team, maybe the spread was 2 points or something like that, right? And then they're down 14-4, and now it's, you know, they're plus 6.5. Like you're taking that plus 6.5. Yeah,
absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like it's way too early. It's like the first 3 minutes of the, no, not even from a relative perspective. It's the first minute of the first quarter in an NBA game right now.
Yeah.
Going from plus 190 to plus 285 feels like some damn good odds.
Absolutely. And again, the offense is only going to improve. The offense is a good to great top five in the sport offense. So that can carry you. A good offense can absolutely carry you, as long as your pitcher can tread water, as long as the bullpen's looked as, you know, better than I thought it would be so far. Again, this is only four games. We can say this caveat all day long that this has only been four games, but this offense will turn around, will be able to carry the Mets. And again, after those, you know, remaining wild card ish teams, I think the Mets have the best offense there. So, you know, that change in the odds, I think if you're going to bet on the Mets, definitely bet on them now to make the playoffs.
There we go. Because like also, right, Drew, like say they go and win both games of doubleheader tomorrow.
Yeah.
Are those odds jumping from plus 285 back to plus 190? Like, what are we doing here? You know what I mean? Like that would be way too much volatility from my perspective for playoff odds in the first six games of the year. So, you know, again, if you like them at plus 190, you should like them at plus 285. Don't get scared off from a bad first week.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's almost as if DraftKings wants you to bet on, wants you to put money down and to bet on the sport by increasing those odds a little bit. It's funny how that works.
You know, let me go through some of these other teams here now, Drew, because you're right. And normally I would probably get weary of that. Be like, oh God, do they know something that I don't? But I don't care, probably because it's my own team. Here's some other odds for National League teams. Cincinnati Reds, plus 155. Obviously, they have the Central playing in their favor as a little bit of a weaker division. Padres, plus 215. Pirates, plus 270. You got the Giants plus 180. And again, like, Giants plus 180 makes sense. I feel like the Mets should still be in that range. Marlins plus 500. And that's really it. Oh, the Diamondbacks are plus 100. So they have pretty good odds, but they're also defending National League champs, mm-hmm. which probably plays into their favor from odds perspective as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah. Again, outside of the central teams, because there's going to be one central division winner. Toss it up who you want to pick. You want to pick the Cubs, you want to pick the Reds. Oh, you want to pick the Pirates, you want to defeat it. You know, it doesn't really matter. But none of those other teams are wild card teams. They're all, you know, high 70s, low 80s teams. So, you know, mm-hmm. you're really just going to have to go out and compete with an NL West team and figure it out from there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Andrew Calagna, any last words for Subway Sports Talk here?
No, man. Juan Soto. He's just the best. He's my boy.
And when does the Rangers playoff run? When does the NHL Stanley Cup playoff start?
Very soon. And the Rangers just pulled off a comeback win this evening. So still number one team in the NHL. So let's go.
There we go.
Let's go.
Beautiful stuff. All right, well, that's all we got. Subway Sports Talk. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on your podcast app. That's Apple or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. All those little ratings mean a lot to me and to all of us who to put our time and blood, sweat, and tears into this show. So thank you all for listening. As always, subscribe on the YouTube channel and on social media at Subway Sports Talk, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, where you can see a bunch of fun stuff that we post throughout the week, and hopefully more and more will come your way throughout baseball season, basketball playoffs, a whole lot of stuff. We'll be talking Knicks probably next week, maybe sprinkle in some baseball talk. But that's it. That's all we got. Andrew Calagna, Pete Kenny. Thanks for listening. Cheers.
See ya.